publish it to yourselves. That's a bit.
Yes.
Enough, much for that.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. May I request the excuse from this meeting at 4:10? I want to try and attend 1 EPC today because I'm required to excuse me if we're not finished by that stage. Thank you, sir.
All right. Another question.
Same apology, Chair, but I would like to leave at 4:09. Thank you.
All right. Then hopefully by when they are, you say they are attending the meetings. The second part of the piece starts around that time. If we could all try and finish our business by about 4:15 so we can attend that question. Not that we should rush the issues, which are saying that let's be mindful that the pieces are continuing and the as we meet this one, there is another one coming at 4:30. I shall not repeat the apologies that we had this morning. We have the same apologies otherwise. Thank you very much. Let's hand over to the department officials. Please introduce yourself. Yes. Yes. Honourable Sinomonyana. She's back here. She was attending the MC then, and she's now back here. So. Thank you for that correction. Yes, go ahead and introduce yourself first and indicate to us the responsibilities each one of you have in the department so that we know who we are teaching here.
Thank you, Chair. I will start with myself and I'll ask colleagues to introduce themselves as well. My name is Mbula Ruchangan. I'm the Director General in the Department of Human Settlements.
Thank you, Chair, members. My name is Neville Chen. I'm the Acting Chief Operations Officer for the Department of Human Settlements.
Thank you, Chair, members. My name is William Chian. I am the Acting Police Director General for Stakeholder and MHR.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chen and honorable members. My name is Onani Matlasi, the Chief Financial Officer for the Department. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Fieng, I'm the Chief Director of Legal Services, National Department of Human Settlement.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and members. My name is Maurice Ichi, Acting Chief Director of Financial Management in the Department.
Good afternoon, Honourable Members. My name is Swazi, I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for Human Settlement.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Sharon Horton, and I'm Executive Support to the Minister in the Ministry of Human Settlements.
Good afternoon, I'm Josh Norma, the Executive Director in the City's Office.
Good afternoon, I'm Sima Sito, I'm Chief Director from Finance.
Good afternoon, Chair Members. My name is Johan Wallace, Acting DDG Program Management Unit.
Thank you very much. Let me let you as well that there is a member from the Office of the Parliamentary Budget Office attending with us. She's sitting right at the back. Thank you very much. Quiet.
Thank you, Chair. We've tried to compress the presentation into a few slides. It's not going to take us more than 10 minutes to make this presentation, which will then give us enough time to engage with the presentation. Without wasting time, I'm going to ask the Chief Operations Officer to lead us on the presentation. We will cover the strategic objectives. We'll look at the APP targets for this current financial year. We'll look at the budget allocation. And then lastly, we'll look at the temporary targets. The issues that were raised by this committee last time we were here about procurement, supply chain issues, we'll get to that. The CFO will lead us in dealing with that part. Without wasting time, I'm going to ask Mr. Chen to lead us.
Thank you, Chair, members. As indicated, that was the presentation overview indicated on page 2 and 3. Chair, as indicated, we've also covered
aspects related to the invitation as provided by yourselves as the committee. Just in relation to the introduction, in relation to, and it's important to note that in relation to the department, its strategic plan as well as its annual performance plan is located within Chapter 8 of the National Development Plan. And in relation to the National Development Plan, there are six aspects that are addressed, which the department has a mandate through the medium-term strategic framework, as well as Outcome 8 and the and the strategic and APP of the department. Those are the four. Those are the six aspects in relation to the NDP Chapter 8. Chair, I'm going to go through some of this very quickly in relation to the vision mission. The departmental strategic objectives are covered. Chair, we've put this here so that in relation to the budget, there's a relationship between what the strategic objectives are, the outputs, and aspects related to what needs to be addressed. The MTSS sub-outcomes, and that's on page, on slide 8, Chair. Chair, in relation to just the MTSS, the MTSS sub-outcomes cover those aspects of Outcome 8, the Outcome 8 agreement, which the Minister has signed with the President in relation to that, and it covers the aspects, and this again flows from the NDP and the MTSF. Chair, just to cover, just an indication of what the strategic planning processes have done, Chair, we have compressed the presentation, and I'm skipping through some of these. There are strategic plan priorities in line with the MTSF, so we've covered and indicated and given information on that. What the strategic plan targets are, and that's on slide 11. So it gives you the strategic plan for 2015 to 2020. The 2016 APP priorities. And then a summary of the program targets in relation to program 1. Program 2, Program 3. So I'm just going to stop at or just pull at this slide and slide 16. Chair, in essence, what slide 16 says, slide 16 and 17, it gives an indication of what the budget allocation in essence will buy in terms of delivery outputs. So it's 100,000 title deeds, 2,455 hectares of well-located land, 9 human settlement interventions in mining towns, 500 feasibilities, 444 informal settlement upgrading plans developed, and then 175,000 households provided with basic services. Mr. Chairman. So you've got the 50 page ones, right?
Yes.
The small ones.
Yes, we have this big one.
Thank you.
apologies, Chair. Chair, shall I go through the I'll go through the hard copy. I've got one which is reflective of what you've got in front of you. Is that it? Okay. Thanks, Chair. Chair, what we did was as per the amendment, we took out some of the duplications and try to ensure that we comply with what the committee had asked. In terms of the presentation overview, Chair, I've gone through the presentation overview. So on page 4, we'll start with page 4, or slide 4 of what you have. Chair, in relation to slide 4, what slide 4 onwards does, it gives us the program, the strategic objectives, the 2016 targets, as well as the performance indicators. But what we're doing is just indicating that in relation to the money that has been allocated to the department, these are the strategic objectives, the targets, and the performance indicators. So slide 4 and 5 gives you, slide 4, 5, and 6 gives you program 1. And then on slide 7, 8, slide 10 and 8 give you the program 2 deliverables in terms of the budget structure of the department. The key issue, members, is the key program deliverables is on page 9 and 10. This is where the heart of the department delivery is, Chair. And in relation to the strategic objectives, it's the program provide implementation support on the delivery of adequate housing to be provided. You'll see that this is in essence, in terms of the two grants that the department has, this is what it buys, the Human Settlements Development Grant and the Urban Settlements Development Grant. Of key issues here, Chair, is 500 feasibility conducted on informal settlements, 444 informal settlement upgrading plans developed, 9 human settlements interventions implemented in 9 towns, 175,000 households upgraded to phase 2, 115,000 subsidy housing opportunities provided, 6,301 social housing units, and then 2,000 community residential units. In addition, on page slide 10, you'll see it speaks about 13 catalytic projects. 75% of projects monitored and verified through the HSDG, and then 2 evaluation studies, particularly on affordable housing and access evaluation. In addition, Chair, you'll note that one of the points that we do cover as part of our program 3 deliverables is the single DFI operational integration. And this entails the consolidation of the 3 DFIs. The department has 3 DFIs, a Rural Housing Loan Fund, NURTURE, and the NHSC. This was referred to in the budget speech of Minister Gordon. Then we've got compact in relation to human settlement entities aligned to the target. And then we cover aspects related to provincial departments and 8 municipalities in terms of capacity development program, and then also the focus in relation to women, youth, and military veterans trained on human settlement skills. Program 4, in terms of the budget structure, covers aspects related to financial management and compliance in relation to aspects in relation to what the department is required in terms of financial management. Chair, I'll then ask, with your permission, that the CFO will then present the aspects related to the budget as from slide 13.
Thank you very much. Thank you, CEO. Chair, I'll take the members through the some part of the budget and the focus points on the points that the committee wanted, particularly in terms of the impact. Chair, I think it's important from what the CEO has indicated in terms of the programs of the department, that we're running the department with 4 programs, your administration, which is Program 1, and Human Settlement Policy Strategy and Planning, Program Delivery Support as Program 3, and your Housing Development Finance as Program 4. Now, we are indicating from the first presentation of the Strategy and Operational Plan, as well as the ATP, that the Department's budget allocation to that effect has been at an amount of 30.6 billion for 2016-17. And I think, Chair, at this point, it's important to emphasize that from the original incentive allocation that we had in the previous MTEF, the budget has been cut over the period of MTEF by 3.7 billion. So in the very same slide, number 13, that the members are looking at, we are indicating that in 2016, we would have had a budget of 33.2 billion, but that has been revised by 2.5 billion to 30.6 billion, which will fund all the operations, including the operations at the provincial and metro level, where the urban settlement development grant funding the metros and the HSDG human settlement development grant funding the provinces through the human settlement development and housing. So the entire budget for 16-17 has dropped by 2.5 billion. Chairperson, if we move to the next slide, we're just indicating the cost to the company and the budget cut over the MTEF period, which I think the impact is mostly on the two outer years, which is the 17-18 and 18-19, to the tune of the 1.9 million and 43.1 million in the 18-19. Chair, this will have an impact in the filling of vacancies that we're indicating as vacant for the department, and I think the emphasis is that with all these cuts, we will have to prioritize which positions are critical to fill and which positions may not actually take at all for us to can fill, within the fact that the budget has been cut in the outer year of 17-18 and 18-19. But here, what is important to indicate here is that as we fill these vacancies and prioritize them, we look at the critical positions that will impact on the development of and the support of the human settlement development grant as well as the urban settlement development grant to metros and provinces respectively. Chair, the next slide, on slide 14 following, is the allocation by program, and as indicated, still running at four programs at the budget of 30.6 billion Jefferson, 34 in 16-18, and the increase of an approximate amount of 3% to 4 in 18-19. So in essence, we will be running with a budget of 100 billion if we look at the whole slide towards the 18-19. And your current budget of 16 is more compressed under program 4, where the two grants are sitting at the budget of 29.9 billion. Supported, Jefferson, by the three administrative and human settlement program, deliver support. Within the 29.4, Jefferson, is the operational budget of the housing development finance, where the CFO office is running and in support of the provinces together with our program 2 and program 3. And then administrative is more compressed with the ministry, deputy ministry, and our corporate support. So now, if we look at that, the operational budget of the department, Chair, is sitting at 724, which supports that whole entire 29.9 billion. My apologies, 29 billion of the two grants, as well as the monies that are transferred to our entities. That will indicate the slides that follow. The next slide, Chairperson, gives an indication of the economic classification, where you would see that the main budget is sitting under the grant, the amount of 29.9 billion, that includes the entities. The entities, which is the money that we transfer to your National Housing Finance Corporation, the Special Housing Regulator Authority, Chairperson, Housing Development Agency, and our community scheme owner services. Chair, we do not have a budget for rural housing loan fund, but at least for next financial year, the loan fund has, the house has been funded with 50 and 52.9 million respectively. Chair, if you look at the whole budget as the cut itself, it suggests to say that the chunk of the money in terms of where we do a histogram or a pie chart is mostly comprising of the grant taking a toll of 29 billion and the entities at the 792. The social housing regulator, Jefferson, is receiving three categories of the budget in terms of the subsidies, whereby the major part goes to the capital, the structural capital grant, which funds the, or rather assist with the social and rental housing construction through the social housing institution and through the regulator authority, which helps our shop. Chair, and there are just some total budgets, but the next slide, Chair, takes the committee members through the split of the 18.2 billion of the allocation in terms of the dollar 2016, whereby you have the highest amount of the grant owing to housing, that 5 billion moving from 5.4 through the impact of the reduction, which has actually impacted us on through the economic downturn. And the next highest is your KwaZulu-Natal at budget of 3.1 billion, and followed by our Northwest Province, where it's sitting at 2.1 billion. But here, if you look at all these allocations, they are in terms of the spheres and the demographics and geographic sphere of the provinces, and in terms of the allocation formula. So we will be in 2016-17 running the development of human settlements and the services rendered through provinces with a budget of 18.2 billion. Now, if you look at that budget, it has also been affected drastically by an amount of 1.6 billion from the DORA allocation of 19.8 as indicative in the 2015 published DORA allocation. And the cut in terms of percentage is giving you an approximate amount of 8%. If you move over to 17-18 and 18-19, with your 18, the budget for the human settlement development grant over the 3 years, it's summing up to an amount of 63 billion with your 21 and 22 in 18 and 19. The next slide here is giving you an indication of your urban settlement development grant that also supports the human settlement development grant. However, it funds the part of bulk infrastructure as well as the services through your water and sanitation. The budget, as it speaks, is also regulated through the allocation formula. And the highest chairperson, if one looks at it like this, is at Gauteng, where three metros are involved at a budget of 5.2 billion. However, also affected by a cut of 120 million at a 2% ranging from 5.3. And then followed by the Nelson Mandela and Buffalo City, where it's sitting under Eastern Cape at 1.5 billion. And I think the major part of what one could say after that is your KwaZulu-Natal with an urban settlement development grant of 1.8 billion. It's some of all our metros as they are 8, it gives us a budget of 10.8 from 11 billion cut by 2%. And furthermore, it's the outer years and education also of 2%. And if you take all these amounts, your 286, 285, and the 385 of 18-19, it sums at 807 million that has been cut under the urban settlement development grant over the medium term of the year 18-19. The next slide, it may not be visible enough, but I think in terms of the changes that we have printed, it does just give a breakdown of where the biggest money of the budget goes to, and it's taken by your human settlement development grant, and it's split in terms of your urban at a percentage of 85. The rest goes to your departmental operation and agency. Chair, the next slide.
Chair, what we've done is that we've just given an indication in terms of the human settlement development grant, what this grant will buy in terms of the provincial allocation. So the CFO gave you an indication of what those provincial allocations are. Chair, just an important point to note, that if the committee references the previous financial year, and the previous financial year, in terms of the total number of opportunities that we had projected to deliver with a bigger budget was 157. You'll see that in relation to this year, notwithstanding the 1.6 billion cut or a reduction, we've increased the number to 177 projected. Chad, I think we need to just indicate that this was the directive given by both Minister and DG in line with the national marching orders, do more with less. So I think in relation to particularly this slide, this gives us an indication that as a department, notwithstanding the reduction of 1.6, we've managed to extract out of efficiencies and better program and project management an additional 10,000 slots. Although we're in the process of determining what our performance was, but we can indicate that we did surpass the 14-15 number of hiring opportunities for the HSDG. That's what the provincial program allocation are, Chair, and that's on slide 23. We've just taken what the specific areas are, particularly on mining towns, disaster, title deeds, what the projected figures are,
And then on slide 24, we give you an indication of the HSDG target per program, together with the projected allocations, budgets, and then the totals. Next few slides, Chair, to give you the mining towns title deeds. Chair, and then with the next 8 slides from slide 27 onwards, gives you an indication of the metros that receive the USDG. These are the targeted numbers that will be delivered or projected to. So translating the money into what the money will buy. In the city of Joburg, this is what their targets are. And we've covered just, Chair, here, in relation to informal settlements upgrading, if you go to the USDG grant framework in DORA, one of the stipulations that we've agreed with together with Treasury as well as Presidency is that 50% or not less than 50% should be utilized for poor households, either in terms of bulk, link, or services. Chair, we've just given this to the committee and you can interrogate this. So that's the city of Joburg, the city of Tshwane, city of Ekurhuleni, Nelson Mandela Bay, city of Cape Town, Buffalo City, eThekwini. Chair, then we go to the issues around the committee focus points. And then in relation to this, Chair, I'll indicate the improving value for money and the SCM. Chair, one of the points that both DG and Minister, if you look at the Minister's budget speech last year, she also did indicate one of the things that we need to be able to do is to tighten up the SCM. The point about the department in summary in relation to SCM is that the quantum available to construct a house and provide services is determined upfront. So we've done a quantity survey calculation. The issue is that as government we should not be a price taker. We're a price giver, and what we need to be able to do is to then determine around issues of functionality. Chair, on that slide you'll see on bullet point 4, the National Department under the DFO is reviewing the current procurement and tender processes for provinces and municipalities with the aim of improving efficiency and effectiveness in the procurement delivery of goods and services in the human settlements delivery chain. It's important to note, Chair, that this has been done in conjunction with the Chief Procurement Officer, as well as the verifications and evaluations that we've done. That point that I've raised, the subsidy quantum for services and construction within, it's on page 36 or slide 36, the second bullet point from the bottom, is predetermined, and given this, there is no room for competition for price of construction. The state must be a price giver, not a taker, based on functionality. I think that's the point that we... From this exercise, it's expected that what we will do is utilize the services of a panel of approved companies who are approved, accredited, and verified through their expertise, skill, and track record. Ensure that the rampant practice of companies buying contracts and performing substandard jobs will be remedied. Service delivery improvement in the sector. Sector set MTSF and related services to be realized with certainty. And the point that we needed to indicate is that as a result of representations and appearing before the standing committee, our portfolio committee, as well as the SIRC committee, it's the point about us being able to appear here with specific targets and being able to be certain that those targets will be met. And then the last point there as well is to improve and achieve the transformation in the industry by ensuring minimum set in the revised BBBEE codes are achieved. I think the point about it is ensuring that particularly in the construction sector and the consultant sector, that there's a transformation particularly in terms of black African, but more particularly females and African females in that regard. Chair, the next slide just gives us an indication of what that is. You'll see that we've covered a substantial amount of issues, particularly around the value for money and the SCM process, and that includes the black economic empowerment and sector transformation, improvements in contract management, and then payment of suppliers in 30 days.
Chair, I think it's just important to note, and I think just Minister has directed that at every MINMEC meeting, MINMEC receives a report on all outstanding payments, if there are any, from the provinces as well as the municipalities utilizing grant funding out of this department. And we've seen, and you'll see that there's been a substantial improvement, particularly in relation to payments of contractors within 30 days, given the fact that this department or within the sector, there's a substantial amount of small contractors that are utilized and ensuring that. So at a political level, the MECs, the executive mayors, the MMCs, minister together with deputy minister oversees this process in terms of receiving reports. And those reports are available. Ensuring sector legislative compliance, that's the next point. Jim, we've indicated that the provisions of the Housing Act, Minister must determine national policy, including minimum national norms and standards in respect of housing developments. And in this regard, we indicate that there's a comprehensive set of ministerial directives that have been issued, particularly on the minimum norms and standards, but more particularly in relation to, for example, ensuring that provinces and municipalities and contractors adhere to the minimums in terms of the subsidy quantums, because we find that and have found that there is a substantial amount of creep upwards in terms of payment of the subsidy quantum. But both DG and Minister have set out a set of directives. Then I think the important point here is that bullet point 4 on that slide, the department has a fully functioning monitoring evaluation unit which undertakes both financial and non-financial oversight based on the legislative mandate. I think it's important to note, Chair, members, that we're one of five departments that has a monitoring and evaluation framework which covers the entire spectrum, both financial and non-financial. It includes quarterly oversight visits. It includes ensuring that there's a relationship between what we spend and what gets delivered. Chair, also in relation to the last couple of years, and includes this financial year, the HSDG and the USDG Division of Revenue Act Bill frameworks contain a comprehensive set of legislative development targets, outputs and outcomes which provinces and municipalities must achieve, and it, particularly in relation to the National Receiving and Transferring Offices. The next lecture, we give you an indication of the national building regulations and what we've done in relation to that, particularly in relation to compliance. And it's around the issue, and I'm sure it's an issue that will come up, particularly in relation to quality and holding contractors who do poor work accountable. One of the points that we also raised, which I think gets overlooked in many respects in relation to legislative compliance, is the Home Loan and Mortgage Disclosure Act, which allows us to be able to oversee the lending practices of particularly banks and financial institutions to ensure that poor households are gaining access to credit. And then the NHBRC as well, Chair. We give an indication, Chair, in the presentation of what minimum norms and standards are, the subsidy typology, the 40 square meter house, the 45 square meter dwelling specifically designed for housing subsidy beneficiaries who are disabled and wheelchair dependent, and then the 50 square meter dwelling designed for allocation to qualifying military vets. So we give that, and that pop-up is provided by Department of Military Veterans. We do provide in the slide and in the presentation share just a specification on the engineering services, so you'll note that in what we're spending in terms of the money that we get allocated, there's minimum known standards and specs for that. We give an articulation of the total cost as indicated. So what does it cost for a house? What does it cost for grade A services, grade B services, and that's just in relation to grade A versus grade B, is the issue around this, the standards in terms of surfaced or not surfaced in relation to grade A, excluding the variances, Chair. We disclosed also the cost of energy in terms of our commitment in relation to energy efficiency. The IGR challenges, we've indicated that provincial compliance with minimum norms and standards, but we've indicated what we've done to achieve that. Improving prioritization to achieve the NGSF targets. I've indicated, Chair, one of the things that we were directed both politically was, and I think the committee and yourself will be aware, that the instruction was given that your NGSF targets must not be adjusted because of the budget reduction. You've got to do more with better as a result of improving efficiencies. Ensuring adherence to reserve and not dispose of well-located land at the municipal level, that's an issue that's been raised by myself and DG in relation to this. And then improving, ensuring provincial municipal planning, funding and implementation. The common issue here is when we do approve or start implementing, are there schools, are there clinics, are there police stations, and that integration, particularly out of other funding. Yeah, we also indicate, and you'll see as part of the USDG, we reserved an amount of 3% for HUSCAP, and that is to deal with the provincial and municipal program management deficiencies. And Shannon, we've indicated the perceived and real corruption within the sector is still a matter which has been attended to through internal audit and investigations unit and risk management. We haven't only lamented, but we've given you what the mitigation measures are. Minister is in the final stages of approving the revised departmental organizational structure, and that's to improve regionalization, to support the provinces, to support the municipalities. An important point here is bullet point 3. The poor delivery trajectory has turned the corner. For 2015-16, the delivery graph has been stabilized and the downward trend arrested, which I think is a very important thing. You'll note that up until the 2014 financial year, the graph or the delivery graph in terms of opportunities was dropping. We're pleased to say that over the 15-16 financial year, we've delivered 10,000 more units. That's the preliminary unaudited figure than we did in 14-15. So you'll see, and if you look at this financial year, we want to be able to increase that by another 10,000. The department had commenced with the consolidation of the human settlements BFIs, and that's covered. And I think it's one of the issues that we will, or it forms part of the tax amendment where we've asked for the HFC to be given the ability to acquire. Okay. Just in relation to the mitigation measures, one of the things that we have dealt with, and I think DG will speak to that, is the ability of the department to hold provinces and municipalities accountable in terms of reallocations. And we've indicated, and we are in discussions with Treasury around how best is that we have an early warning system that allows us to be able to reallocate money to better performing municipalities, provinces, rather than a process where we, I think the issue here is that it must be done, but done within the compliance and regulatory. The last slide just gives an indication to ensure program funding, with particularly reference to the catalytic program. And then the last point, just on the structure, the department will regionalize operations to ensure program and project planning, improve monitoring and evaluation, and then finalizing evaluations and related policy and funding revisions to rationalize and bring consistency and certainty of funding and program sustainability. Thanks, Steve. Chair.
That concludes the presentation. We are ready to take questions.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, you have the presentation for you. Let's engage with it and the officials. persons, Honorable Sheikh, Honorable Manana, Honorable Mantuchin. Right, in the order.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Just a few questions. You know, it's such a big document to be compressed. It's not always easy to absorb everything, but nevertheless, I just have some few questions to raise and then obviously a commentary. The slide number 15, the 18 posts that are vacant, are those strategic posts or what is the plan with regards to the filling of those posts? Because I see that there are 80 posts that are still vacant. So what are they, strategic, are they important, or is that going to be the situation for the future? The next slide, slide number 15, deals with that. Now, I find this interesting. In all departments, they seem to do this. And I thought, look, obviously planning is an important part of any old department, but I noticed that there's, for this financial year, 83 million for policy, strategy, and planning. Is that not a, I figure that's a little exorbitant for planning and policy, 83 million. Just a question. Slide number, well, it's not numbered here, so it's a slide that is two slides after this one. In other words, it's the heading allocation over MDF by economic classification. Now, the two questions I have with regards to your departmental operational. First of all, I see it's 380 million for 624 employees, and if you work out, it works out to about 640,000. That's quite a good salary to be earned by employees in the department. Am I correct in making that calculation? 380 million, 83 for 624 employees. That's the one question. And then, can we then just also get clarification on the 375 million for goods and services? What does that include? Not expect detail, but just if you can just broadly what is included there, please, if you may. Then slide number 37. Somebody will not number just difficult to. That's the community focus point. Yes, it's slide number 37. I noticed that they are measures that have been included, that's improving value for money, but that's the ones here. Now, I noticed that there are good ideas there and actions that are going to be taken, but do we have an idea of the dates? Is it immediate or time frames? You know, it always makes it easy because we would just like to get an indication of when these approved companies, obviously you can't go from now, zero, to starting the next day or so forth. So, can we just get an indication of if there are any time frames? Again, you might not be able to give the answer now on what's here, but just if we can get that, even if it seems like we're at a later stage. Then, this slide, which is now accounted as part from the back, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because of numbers. The IGR chair challenges. Okay, so my question that I've written here, so there's lack of capacity, so what is the action that's been taken? Is going to stay as a challenge, or what plans, what immediate action has been recommended for that? And the second bullet point is also that challenge is also worrying as well. The perceived and real corruption within the sector is a matter with which has been attended through internal audit and investigations unit. Again, you know, what is the progress, if any, on those on the challenge? And then, Chair, this is obviously not for the department, but see that the department has given us this information. The last four slides. I would like to suggest, and I'm not the one saying that we don't believe it, but that would be useful to go into oversight on these measures that have been taken, because obviously those measures aim to improve the functioning of the department, but it would be useful for the committee to monitor those, or those to be monitored. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Malala.
Thank you, Padma. much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation from the Department of Human Settlements. Chairperson, let me first raise my concern with regards to the report that you are receiving. On Friday, we're given a separate document from this one, and today we're given this one. And our policy in this committee is that we need to get a report prior to the meeting. And now you were presenting this one, which was handed over yesterday. So I have looked at the one that we have sent to us on Friday, and I have some questions with regards to that report. I think it's related when I was trying to look at the two documents. So you will pardon me because some of the questions I'm going to raise it from the previous document. In the near future, please give us one straightforward report that you are going to present. The first question that I would like to ask is with regards to slide 20 of the document that you sent it to us. On slide 20, I don't know that we do have the document. The department aims to achieve a target of 90% availability of how the subsidy system data is processing. Is there a particular reason why the target is set below 100%? The second question is with regards to the background, the ratification of the Tiger Beat. The committee would like to get an explanation with regards to the total number of all the Tiger Beat backups in the country. On slide 45 of the previous document, they have indicated that there is zero target for Tiger Beat backlog eradication in Mpumalanga province. Yet there is a budget allocation and a ring fence amount. Can you clarify to us what is all that? In slide 32, the department mentioned that its budget has been reduced by 2.5 billion. Based on this reduction, is the department confident that it will be able to achieve its mandate? Chairperson, during our interaction with the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, it indicated that there is good work that we are doing, but the upgrading of 2,200 informal settlements has not been initiated, notwithstanding an assessment of 1.160 and 2.5259 plans have been produced. Those are the issues that we're receiving from the Department of Planning and Monitoring. I think we need to take care of it. And then they indicated that there is low progress in the provision of rental stroke social housing targets. The AG also presented your findings with regards to your department, and he indicated that subsidies to beneficiaries did not comply with the specified entry requirement and included applications that were approved after the date of birth. This was repeated findings in the Free State, Mpumalanga, Western Cape. It also occurred in the Northwest province as a new finding. My last question, Chairperson, is a response from the department with regards to Balfour. If you remember that last year I raised this matter, the Balfour municipality, and I've just received I received a letter from Human Settlement Mpumalanga Province Executive directed to the Accounting Officer, National Department. According to them, they are saying they're going to appoint the contractor. And they give us some figures. But when is this going to take place? Because according to them, it's in 3 months' time they will be completing this. My constituency, unfortunately, is in bad policy. During break time, during lunch time, I talk to the customers and say, hey, don't know anything about it. And on the 27th, we'll be closing Parliament. You know, I expected to go back to our constituency. And they will need an explanation to me. This letter doesn't have a date. I don't know when was it sent to the Department of National Development. If my memory says me correct. No, says me correct. I asked this question in September last year. How many months now? To come up with just an answer to say what are we doing with this? October, November, December, January, February, March, April, now in May, 8 months down the line. I am not happy with this response, I must indicate. If I can get an answer so that they can go back to this community and tell them the truth, only the truth.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. And thank you for coming and presenting to us. Chair, I'm just going to have a few general comments initially. Can the department first explain to us why it is that you need 11 delegates to come and do this presentation when only three of you actually present? Surely we are wasting money again having so many people to come to sit here. It happens to not only the department is guilty of this, but if the department comes here, it needs to be a chance to get some time out of office and come have a look at Cape Town. As regards the presentation, and this I'm saying is tongue in cheek, but our letter to you quite clearly said in bold lettering that we wanted a presentation of not more than 12 pages. It presented us today with 53 and the electronic one was 73. Am I to assume then that when we ask for 12 and you've got 73, that's multiplied by 6. So when a minister tells us you've provided 4 million houses, that we divided by 6 to arrive at the real figure. That was made cheap, but I just thought, guys, it's over till we can really limit this thing to a lot. Because all the information that we're not really interested in, understand, we're the Appropriations Committee, we're interested in the money. And what's happening with the money? What are you doing with the money that's allocated? Is it being spent correctly? Are you able to spend it and is it achieving the results you want? That's our bottom line. If I can refer you to slide 7. Sorry, I'm going to start on slide 5. APP program 1, just an indication. You tell us what your strategic objective is, you tell us what the target is, and then you tell us what the performance indicator is, but you don't give us any results. So the target might be 100% compliance, but you don't know what you've achieved. You just say that the point indicator would be the percentage compliance. You don't tell us what the result is. When I look at all of the general support, it's one of the worst possible performances that I've seen compliance with legislation. It was a worst findings, worst outcome area, was a compliance with legislation. What have you done to try and fix this? I know this was in a previous cycle because all of the general report in the rear, not in advance, but this needs attention, and I don't know what attention has been given to us, because the APP that we present with here doesn't really say to me what you're doing to change this. It says you've got a target, but how are you going to achieve that target, and what have you achieved up to now, because that doesn't appear anywhere in this. Slide 19, before I get to this, slide 7, I beg your pardon. On slide 7, the target is 100,000 title deeds backlog eradicated, and the performance would be the number of title deeds actually eradicated.
We heard a little while ago that the actual bankrupt on title deeds is something in the order of 950,000. But your target here is only 100,000. What about the other 850,000 Because this is becoming a very serious problem. It's blocking economic development for literally millions of people. Because having a title deed gives you access to finance. You can go to a bank and get a loan, and you can have your title deed as security because you can get a loan against your property. While people don't have title deeds, they can't do that because you can't register a bond without a title deed. It's a really serious issue, and we're holding up the economy of this country by a simple thing like issuing title deeds. And it is a simple process. It's an administrative function. What is the problem? I never see budgeted figures for it. I see it in here now, but your target's like 100,000. What about the rest? This is why the Auditor General has troubles when he comes and finds these things and gives us these poor-looking reports, because we're not addressing the real issue. It's fine, give people houses, but there's more to it than just the house. I've been taking the housing developments where there are houses in the middle of nowhere. No roads, no access to work opportunities, no access to shops, parks, schools, churches, nothing. Just houses. No water, no electricity, just houses. And those same houses, while we're on the subject, I asked, at the time I asked, what is the size of these houses? This was the Gauteng Department of Housing. And they said that the houses are 42 square meters, supposed to be 6 meters by 7 meters. I went and measured them. They were half a meter shy both ways. So the contractor was cutting half a meter off each house. It's not even picked up. I'm trusting when I see in the presentation like this that you're doing oversight, non-financial and financial, that that kind of thing is looked at. If there's a specified size window, you go and check it. You go and measure that the window is the right size. Was that also being cut by 100 mils this side and 10 mils that side? We need to be on board with these things because the contractors rip us off every which way. And if we don't offer people a product, let it be a quality product. We don't need substandard stuff, especially not when we're paying the price for it. The price of a house nowadays is 110,000 rand for a 40 square meter house. We should get a reasonable house for that figure. On slide 19. We're talking about the cuts and the reduction here, and across the board we've got a 2% cut. I wanted to know what effect this has had on your targets. It may be in here, but I didn't see specifically the direct impact of the budget cut on your target figures for the same period. Does it have an effect, or have we made some kind of plans to try and reach the same target in the cut amount, or do our targets come down commensurately? Slide 26. Here we're talking about title deeds, backlog eradication. I've really spoken about the total number. I'd like to ask something about the time backlog. How long has it been that these title deeds have been outstanding? Is it a recent thing? Does some of them go back? People have been waiting 5 years, 10 years, 15 years for a title deed. How old is this backlog? And are we addressing older ones first? Is there a program in place that the older ones get done first? Or are we dealing with the new ones and the older ones just stay and get worse and worse and worse? And the reason I ask that is because it was something else the Auditor General picked up to do with the issue of subsidies. Because he says subsidies beneficiaries do not comply with the specified entry requirements and include applications that were approved of after the date of death of the applicant. Now, obviously, because of the time factor again, you know, are we in a situation where we're going to be issuing time for these to people who are already deceased? Because then there also a problem. It causes a major issue when it comes to trying to administer the deceased estate of that person. So once again, I'm pleading with you, please address these issues because they are important. They can change the economy in this country. Slide 41. Sorry, I've got to that issue already, the financial and non-financial oversight. Slide 49. My colleagues already addressed the issue of the lack of capacity and perceived and real collection. What I would like to see is, I know we see it everywhere that there are plans in place to try and put a stop to corruption and corrupt activity, but there doesn't seem to be any consequence. Do you in your department have any specific consequence that is imposed, or some kind of sanction that kicks in as soon as this kind of thing is discovered, or is just dealt with internally, an internal disability committee, some of you on the rap on the knuckles and said they'll do it again, and then carry on as before. We need to put a stop to this, and the only way to do it is to have some real consequence. If there is a consequence, people then stop doing it because they don't want the consequence. But if there's a consequence that nobody bothers too much about, well, then there's no reason why they shouldn't keep going. If you look at slide 9 and slide 44 together, slide 9 speaks of households, it says housing opportunities, social housing units, and community residential units, and I wanted to know what they are in relation to the typology mentioned on slide 44, when we have the 40 square meter, the 45 square meter, and the 50 square meter housing. Is there some relation between these, or is the 40, 45, and 50 all fall into just housing opportunities, and the others are separate again? And maybe you could just give us a little more of what comprises a social housing unit and what is a community residential unit. What's the difference between the two? So I just haven't seen these things, so I'm not fully on board with what the difference is. And my last comment was just on IGR. I know it's a difficult problem, and it's what I mentioned before when you go to an area where they're just houses and nothing else. Is there some action going on at the moment? Because the problem seems to me, having been in a municipality and, you know, at municipal level, when the community comes and complains, it's always, oh, well, it's not our competency, it's province must come and provide the houses. And you go to province and imagine that it's the municipality's problem because they're not giving us the land to build the houses on. And eventually you get to the situation, somebody decides they'll go and build houses there, but nobody bothers to talk to the roads department or the electricity department or water department to find out whether they can actually go and build houses there. Is there going to be water available and electricity and everything else? And it's a combined effort just to try and get human settlements together, because it's no longer housing, it's now human settlements. So just assure me that this is a process that is ongoing and that you are achieving some results in that area, where once you get a finished product, it is a human settlement and not just a house. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Shopestoli.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the Department for the presentation. I was pleased to hear that there is improvement in the 30-day payment, because, you know, that is at the bottom of what causes poverty in the villages and in the towns. Because a lot of small contractors that some of us know, went down the drain because of this late payment. And it is actually very good if there is an improvement in that area. But the presenter first said that he's saying this because there are regular reports, even from provinces, maybe municipalities, I didn't hear that very clearly, that they get. And I would ask through you, Chair, if they can assist us by forwarding the reports so that we can actually study them and have a further discussion with the department, because this is very serious. it is very difficult for this small contractor to be able to pay their workers if they are not paid. It is even difficult for them to finish projects if they are not paid on time. And you know what it means? If projects are not finished, you will never ever see the end of this project. And we should, you know, we should ask this government try by all means to see to it that we address some of these things that can be arrested. If they deliver, people will have no reason to be up on arms, except those who are criminal, and will be able to identify those who are criminal. But I would like to have those reports. I would like to actually follow them up with your time. Thank you.
Just a few questions for my part, on slide 5, the 90% of the use of IT services, all of that, that the 90% was your target. One wonders why you didn't target the 100%, and that 90% across cost. So if you could just unpack that a little bit, because we don't see the monetary figures there. Secondly, on slide 6, you had the 100% target of communication with the consumers, 500,000 reached. Does the 500,000 represent your 100%? It's not quite clear. And again, at what cost? On slide 9. So give us a sense of how many informal settlements we have. I see you are saying 500 feasibility collected on informal settlements. Are these pockets of informal settlements, or you're talking 500 units of informal settlements? Or does the 500 represent a sample of informal settlements scattered all over the country? On slide 18, the disaster. There are provinces, Free State, Northern Cape, Northwest, Western Cape, no allocation for disaster. What does that mean? Are we suggesting that if disasters happen there, in other words, in these provinces, there is no allocation? If you could explain that to us, the zero allocation then. What implementation, slides 27 to 34? It's simple logic that when you build a house, you build a complete house, as you indicate here. But how much of that is being shared between yourselves and what else? Because if we talk to water and sanitation department and we talk to yourselves, we might be talking to a moving target. If you could clear that with us. Because at one stage, sanitation was with yourselves, and other stages taken back to that department and forth. It keeps on moving back and forth. And both departments have budgets on this item. Lastly, if you could direct me to anything that talks about hostel upgrading, I if you did, I missed it. If it does doesn't exist in letter one. Because I can tell you that S.J. Smith in heaven, which I visited during the voter registration, is simply not fit for human residence. And I know that the police department has a program towards the hostel upgrade, but we don't seem to see it here. Oh, I missed it. I must be honest, I missed it. I missed that kind of thing. The last issue is more of a specific area. The Vulinje Terra project, 25,000 RTB houses, which was raised in this in a meeting last year, I think. And we were told that that project is up and running and there are no problems. And I can tell you now that we are nowhere near finishing that project. We are supposed to complete it in 2015. Started in 2011. It was a 5-year project, nowhere near this. And when we raised this issue with the then DG, he said he was on top of the issue. And when we went back to check on that project, it has problems. And I'm saying, nowhere near finishing that project of 25,000. If you could address that issue as well, and indicate to us how many houses have been built so far since 2011 to date. And I'm saying it's behind schedule. And what are the financial costs related to that project being behind schedule? Thank you.
Let me start with the first question, with the question on the delegation. We have 11 people. Why are they all here? Chair, this morning we made a presentation to the select committee on social services, and there were 5 items that they wanted us to cover. One of them is the new regulations on community scheme, sectional title. Advocate Sien, who was sitting over there wearing a red belt, made that presentation this morning. She's the chief director heading our legal services. The CFO is sitting over there on this row. When we come to portfolio committee members, we always make it a point that the CFO, the COO, and myself attend those meetings. The 2 colleagues who are sitting at the back, they're based here in Cape Town, they are in the office of the minister. They deal with all the business of cabinet, the parliament, and all the stakeholders around the parliament affairs. But the 2 of them are based in the office of the minister. At the back behind me is the acting director, EDG, responsible for program and project implementation units. Mr. Vance, the bulk of his job is around informal settlements upgrading. I'm sure he's going to help us to answer some of the questions. So we are attending to 3 items today. We don't usually count the numbers. But today there are 3 meetings that we are attending to. One is the portfolio committee on social services, the select committee on social services. This afternoon we're meeting to discuss the karaoke projects with the minister. So that's why we have this. I wanted all of them to be in the meeting. It's not to say that all of them will be responding to the questions. There's a question on the aging posts. Are they critical? They are critical. In fact, they're more than 80 critical posts. But because of the budget cuts, we have to prioritize within our priorities. We would love to fill all the vacant positions that we can't. We don't want to be reckless about it. We have to fill the critical positions, and you will see the majority of them are in line function. Last year in October, we negotiated with Treasury successfully, and they were going to give us 25 million rand so that we can fill the positions. But this year, in January, they took 28 million rand out of the budget. If you look at the three allocation, you will notice that next year we're losing 28 million. This year there was no increase on our compensation of employees. And the third year, there will be 43 million rand reduction on our operational budget. So we have to be responsible. We don't want to fill positions. And then 3 years from now, we don't know how to pay salaries. So we started with the 18. It's more than 18 that we want to fill. But the 18 are critical positions that we have to fill them. And we have no other choice but to fill them. But it would mean, therefore, that we would have to reprioritize within our means. We've discussed this with Treasury, and they have supported the approach that we're taking. Then there was a question about the 3 million rands on strategy and planning. Implementation is the other side of planning. In the built environment, in the sector that we're in, you spend not less than 3 to 6 months to package projects, because you have to go through your environmental approvals, your planning approvals, beneficiary administration, all of those things. They don't take you less than 32 months to do, 36 months to do. In fact, if you want to manage all of your pipeline of projects, you must invest your energy and time in planning. We call them upstream activities. So you want to invest time in your upstream activities. A well-packaged and well-planned project is easy to implement. You simply need to get a contractor to do what he's supposed to do. In most cases, if you look at all of our projects, the bulk of our challenges are in your upstream planning activities. And that's why part of that will go into packaging business plans with provinces. Because a number of provinces, they have to submit those business plans to us. And before we can submit them to Treasury, Treasury will not release the funds. The 30 billion rand that we administer every year is based on the business plans that we get from provinces. But there's also an alignment question, which is why we link it under strategy. Because we don't just want to get business plans from provinces. They must be aligned to the national priorities. Informal settlements are paid. You've listed some of them already. So that budget is still a modest budget, considering the fact that managing 30 billion rand. I would assume that you don't need more than 83 million to manage your plans. But we're trying to do with the little that we have. Then the question on the goods and services, 375 million rand for goods and services. And this is the challenge that we are faced with. If you can't fill the position, then what do you do? We need a built environment. And the bulk of the expertise that we need don't come to the town planners, don't come to your engineers, your designers. All of these people would prefer to work for lucrative companies outside government. Some of them would prefer to go to Australia, Canada, or Dubai, because they get paid in dollars there. So we're in a space where we compete with other companies for car skill, because we're in the built environment. It's a car skill environment. So what we do, we use the budget, the 10 billion rand that we have, to become price makers. In other words, we can create a panel of professional teams, a panel of consulting engineers, that as and when we need them, we can use them to verify the work that we've done in them. So that budget, the 375 million rand budget, if you like, it's a consulting budget, good services and consulting. My colleague behind me manages one program which is called the National Upgrading Support Program. Simply put, it's an informal settlement upgrading program. And the bigger part of that program is about counting the dwellers in informal settlements, counting the beneficiaries, doing geotech assessments. It's time consuming, it's very tedious, but it has to be done. And we do it in some cases with consultants, with engineers, with antennas, so that we can package an informal settlements plan properly. Not all informal settlements have to be upgraded where they are. So we do a lot of high-level feasibility to make sure that we upgrade those informal settlements. And sometimes it takes us more than 36 months to do that.
Just one moment. I'm told that there is a refreshment outside. So anyone of you would like to refresh yourselves? And other things. they're afraid to do so, it would be working towards saving them. Now that includes our big staff as well. So we will not cause it to go hungry.
Chairperson, you know, members of this committee are very serious about what we're doing. So in the future, we'd ask them to put them here so that we don't need discussions because of coffee.
Thank you, Chair. The other question on Vrindlela, I'll pick a few questions. My colleagues will respond to other questions. As we speak, there are 11,500 units in Vrindlela that have been completed. It's a 25,000 unit project, which means that it's going to cost us more than 3 billion rands to build. Remember, Vulindela is a PHP, what we call the People Housing Process Project. In other words, you want cooperatives to participate, you want NGOs to participate, you want people to play a role in building their own houses, which renders it a little bit slow, unlike other contractor built projects, because if you have communities and you have youth cooperatives, you have women cooperatives that are playing a role, you have different suppliers. So it slows the process down. But besides, KZN has a budget of 3.2 billion and they can't afford to build 25,000 units within a short space of 2 years. So the intention is to make sure that they phase the project over a longer period. Even though they wanted to do it within 4 years, it would be at the expense of our projects and other programs. But this is one flashy project, even though it has some challenges here and there, but we look at it as a flashy project on how to manage cooperatives and how to manage people housing process projects, especially the enhanced one, because we have moved now away from traditional PHPs to enhanced PHPs. In the past, we used to have what was called ILIMA, people coming together to build houses for themselves. Now this one is enhanced because you have different players involved. You also have NHBRC assisting this community because every project has to be registered with NHBRC for warranty purposes. There's a question on the documentation. It was not a question, I think it was a concern. I think I need to apologize on that one upfront. We always tire on these things. In all committee meetings, we always make a point that documents are there on time, and we always make sure that we test the presentation before the start of the meeting. I think today the team maybe got distracted by the fact that we had other meetings before this meeting. But when we come to the committees, we always make it a point that everything is done on time, and I promise that it will not happen again. We've been to this committee before, and we haven't done, and we haven't experienced the glitches that we experienced today. And I take full responsibility for that as a county officer. Then, there was a question about the title deeds. The title deeds, the acceleration on the title deeds is also a function of budget. We have 30 billion rand. To deliver 8,000 title deeds, or to deliver 800,000 title deeds, it would mean therefore that you must reduce the number of units that you want to deliver. For instance, for the first time, we've managed to convince Treasury to ring-fence the title deeds budget, because we realized that provinces would prioritize units at the expense of eradicating the backlog on title deeds. So this year, I'm sure you have noticed in the Division of Revenue Act that we ring-fenced the budget for the title deeds. For instance, we needed 1.7 billion rands to eradicate all the title deeds. But 1.7 billion rands will give you plus minus 1,000 units. So then the question is, do you want to keep a balance, a healthy balance, 200,000 this year, maybe ask you next year, until provinces are ready and they have geared themselves properly. So that's the challenge that we are faced with, because you're dealing with the backlog, as you have mentioned as well. You also want to curtail the new backlog. You don't want to create a new backlog, because if you don't issue a title deed now, then you're going to have backlog in the future. So we manage in both. I think it's a balancing act. If we had all the money in the world, we would be able to upscale on the title deeds. But again, we appreciate the fact that at least now there is a reference budget, and we will be able to deal with the title deeds backlog. And we can come back and present here on our provinces are performing on that title deed. On Mpumalanga, there was a zero. The only reason we had a heated discussion with the AGOT in Mpumalanga on the targets, because we wanted them to increase the number. And we, when we talked to him in the last technical minute, he promised to come back to us, because he said, if you're not putting a higher allocation and you're giving us more numbers, then we'll move a portion of your budget to those provinces that will be able to help us to give us more title deeds. So we gave them up until last week, I was made to believe that they have revised their figure, because we wanted a big figure from Mpumalanga. So, and a bigger allocation as well. But for now, we have ring-fenced 15 million and we've asked them to give us a bigger target. The challenge with title deeds, especially with the federal part of it, is that in some cases you're still dealing with your township establishments, you're dealing with your township schemes, you're dealing with subdivisions. But the bigger thing is that once you have concluded all of those things, the subdivisions, the township establishments, there is no beneficiary to issue a title deed to, because those beneficiaries have moved on. Some of them, they're no longer here, some of them, they bought property elsewhere, they sold the house, even though some would sell it in the black market. But the challenge is that you're dealing with a very complicated exercise. If it was simple about conveyancing, we would wipe out that delicate exercise in no time. But it's more than just conveyancing. It covers a wide range of issues. There are payment challenges, there are beneficiary administration challenges, and there are conveyancing issues that we deal with. We're more than willing, maybe at some point, come back and present how the entire title deed program is being managed. There is a national structure in place, the steering committee, which is chaired by the COO. There is a provincial technical task team, which is chaired by the AGD, and they meet regularly to deal with the different challenges that they are faced with. There's a question on the number of informal settlements. How many informal settlements are we talking about? In this period, the government, the MGSF period, we're targeting 2,200 informal settlements. But in these 2,200 informal settlements, we're talking about plus minus 850,000 households. So you look at it in different ways. You look at the number of informal settlements, and you're also looking at the number of households in these informal settlements. So we've got both, we're targeting both. The intention is to make sure that all the 2,200 informal settlements by 2019, at least they are serviced. There's water, there's sanitation, and there's security of China as well. So that's what we're targeting in this period. We started very low. We report to cabinet on a quarterly basis on how we're performing on informal settlements upgrading. So part of it is about plans, establishing the plans, which is what my colleague is doing in the department. Part of it is about services, and part of it is about security of Kenya. There was a question about the... We want to come back to you on this one. We do have a letter from the province, from Parifan and Balfour. We talked to the AGD about this, and I think there are some gaps in the report. I've seen that letter. I've read it myself. It was a block project, and they're trying to find a way to unblock it. But we felt that it's taking them too long to deal with this issue. If we can be given an opportunity, maybe to come back to you on this one with a specific report, we've got the letter. I'll talk to the AGD in Masange immediately after this meeting, so that we get to know exactly what is happening. And before you go back to the constituents, you should have all the information in place so that we can communicate directly to the beneficiaries there. I wouldn't want to give a specific answer now until I've spoken to the AGD. Then there's a question about the quality of houses. Remember, every house we build, it has to be registered with NHBRC. Every builder who builds for us has to be registered with NHBRC. There is no builder who is allowed to build in the interface that builder is not registered with NHBRC. And it's by law. And if you go to the NHBRC website, you will see a long list of builders, contractors, developers who have been disciplined. Some of them have been registered. If you look at that website, you'll see a long list of disciplinary measures that have taken place against the builders. The reason why we enroll houses, we register houses, and we register developers, home builders, is because the warrants and certificate has to be issued on each and every house, just like all of us. If you buy a car, you get a warrant. If you build your own house, you have to get that warrant certificate. So we can't afford to allow builders who are not registered to the NHBRC to build. In the past, before 2011, we had builders who were building in the PHP space, people housing process space, and those were builders who were not registered with the NHBRC because PHP units were not allowed, were not enrolled. By law, PHP started, as I said, as ILIM, of people coming together to build houses for themselves. Now we've picked it up that some unscrupulous contractors end up building there in the PHP space. So in 2011, in the 2013, that all units have to be registered with NHBRC so that if something happens to that unit, there are structural issues, a warranty can be issued and that house can be rectified. So that's why all houses that are built in currently are rectified, are registered with NHBRC. I'll ask my colleague, the CFO, to answer the question on the disaster allocation. There was a question on water and sanitation. Why we're doing water and sanitation, respite as human settlements, and the Department of Water and Sanitation also doing some work on water and sanitation. Remember, the 10 billion rands that goes to the metro is administered by ourselves. It used to be what was referred to as mixed cities or municipal infrastructure grant. So when we accredited municipalities to level 2, all the 8 metros to level 2, we started administering the urban settlements development grant. And that development grant, it buys you bulk water, it buys you bulk sewer, it buys you land acquisition, informal settlement subdivision. So it supplements the capital budget of municipalities. So there are no duplication there. You will notice that in most cases, the Department of Water and Sanitation will be more responsible for the regional schemes outside the metros, or what you would call the inter-regional schemes. In other words, you will have a scheme that is servicing more than one municipality, or a scheme that is servicing more than one province. So they're very much involved in finding bulk water, bulk sewer outside the metros. But in the metros, you will notice that the bulk of your infrastructure, the bulk infrastructure, is funded from the urban settlements development grant. So we don't see that as an application. We monitor the performance of the metros on a quarterly basis. We look at the performance, we looked at last year's performance, the early the year right now, we've been driving to them. We had a series of meetings with the city managers and the executive directors of those metros that are not performing. Hostel upgrading, you wanted us to show you the slide that talks to hostel upgrading. We replaced the old hostel upgrading program with CRU. It's called the Community Residential Units. We've got a target there of 2,000 community residential units on that slide, I think slide number 9. So we have a target, but we don't refer to it as hostel upgrading program anymore. We call it community residential units. The only challenge that we faced with there is the standardization of the units. The team is working on that together with the policy departments of various provinces so that we can standardize the unit cost, because there are a lot of fluctuations per unit on hostel upgrading. But we do it as part of our target. We got a 5-year target on the hostel upgrading. I think I've covered some of the questions. I will ask our colleagues to talk to some of the questions on the AG funding. I think the report that you are looking at, the two audit findings, there's an audit finding for the AG report, let me put it this way, there's an AG report for the department. There is an AG report for the sector, which covers all the 9 provinces. And you probably have noticed that some provinces, they have a clean audit. In fact, there's one province that has a clean audit. And then there are a number of provinces with unverified with matters of emphasis from the AG. We've looked at those. They were presented to mimic the report, and we know exactly which provinces are grappling with some of the issues, the audit issues. From the department side, we also got an unqualified audit. There were a few matters of emphasis that were highlighted by the AG. We discussed them. The last meeting we had with the AG was last week, We have quarterly meetings with EAG to discuss all of those issues. And they are all the view that there is absolutely no reason for us not to get taken on it, because those issues are minor issues that can be dealt with easily. The question about consumer education, 500,000 consumer, what is the target? What is the cost on the 500,000? What we're trying to do there, remember, we are mandated by law that we must do consumer education, because we're not just building a house, we're creating an asset for beneficiaries. So it's important that the beneficiaries get to know how to manage this asset. So what we've done, in most townships, especially in all townships, the majority of people do not know how to transact or how to sell their property at the value that the property is appreciating at. What is happening is that in some cases people would sell their property in different ways, but they would go into the black market. So what we've done, we've targeted 500,000 to provide transaction support, to provide consumer education, also to tell them the value of the properties. If you go to Niger, for instance, and you look at some of those houses in wide locations, it's the best view that you will find in Niger. Those houses, the value of those houses has gone more than what those houses were built for. For instance, if a house is 110,000, the top structure is 110,000, and the service park is about 43,000, and we build a house today at 160,000, and that house, in a year time or in 2 years time, the value of that house will go beyond 250,000. So what we want to do is to be able to communicate to the beneficiaries on how to transact if they want to sell the house. But they can only sell it after 8 years. Before the 8 year period, they have to either give the house back to the department, and then the department will be able to reallocate it to another beneficiary, or they can sell it to the department. But the first right of refusal is the department. We don't want people to sell their house into the market in the 8 year period. So the 500,000 is about consumer education. I think there's a lot of consumer education in property management, in property values, or in understanding how to transact properties in general. So we can come here and present it more to how we communicate to the beneficiaries on issues of asset management and transaction. I think I've covered most of the questions that were raised, and if there are any questions that I've left out, my colleagues will respond to them. The 90% compliance, my colleague will respond to that question as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. In relation to the 90% compliance, part of the IT services we provide what is called a housing subsidy system. And this is a period, this is something that we had a discussion and come to a neat compromise in relation to the 90%. And what we can assure you is that during the course of next year, APP will be 100%. And the reason we settled on this compromise is because part of the responsibility of the department is to make available the national system, which is used at a provincial level to be able to approve subsidies for beneficiaries in relation to projects that are undertaken. And one of the issues that we're finalizing is the issue around responsibility for provincial IT operationality and compliance. And that unfortunately is one of the issues that, as part of a compliance process within the department, it's an issue that we have to settle on. That from our side, it's 100%. But in relation to availability at provincial level, one of the consequences of the result of this is that particularly, and we've raised this issue with Treasury, we've raised it with DPME. I think there needs to be alignment between the APP and the strategic plans. Because if we say we're going to deliver and we give in Mpumalanga 1 billion, we've got to be able to see that figure translate itself into the APP of the Department of Human Settlements. And that's the consequence of one of the issues. It's a drawback, and it's something that the committee might want to take in relation to particularly the allocations. Chair, the issue around the reports for the 30-day payments, that we will make available to yourselves, and we will make that available. Chair, just one issue on the issue of consequences for corruption.
and particularly maladministration. We have a blacklisting process, particularly for those contractors that are or fall short of what the requirements are. And I think in relation to the provinces, you know, if there are any, I think the point is that one has to, particularly in relation to disciplinary process around corruption, one has to take a process where you go through the full judicial process of that. So there are consequences, and one of the consequences is the blacklisting, and that blacklisting does get done through the chief procurement officer's office. Chair, and the last point on the AG findings around the subsidies, I think the issue is that we raise this issue with the AG, that you will have situations where someone has applied for a subsidy, and during the course of the period in which that subsidy gets approved, a person passes on for the applicant for the subsidy. Now the point about that is it would be unfair and unjust and inequitable to withdraw that subsidy because there are children, there are spouses involved in relation to that. And I think it's one of the consequences of a system that in between the time of the application, and in many instances you have two applications. So in many in instances where you provide a SciTech service in terms of informal settlement upgrading, there's a subsidy application. So you have a family that and because the process is sometimes protracted, when you have a consolidation subsidy, you go back to the same stand, and you might find that the main applicant, being the father or the mother, has passed on, and you've got children who reside. And the point about it is, we've indicated to the AG that you can't then. I mean, it's not something that is within the constitutionality, but also in terms of the dignity and consistent with the Kenyan government, that you then cancel that subsidy. The issue is we have to deal with the fact that if there are problems with the interstate succession, we've got to resolve that. You don't disadvantage children or a spouse or a family because the system doesn't work. So I think that's one of the issues that we've raised. And particularly what we do not want to do is to have children or households ending up without security of Kenya. And hence the subsidy gets approved because no one can, I mean, only person that can do that or withdraw that subsidy is the executive, and I don't think it's something that we can enforce. Thanks, Chair.
There were two other questions just before we get to the other one to give in cargo. There's a question on the timelines linked to the panel of contractors. Then the second question is whether we'll be able to meet our guidance given the budget cut. I would want to respond to those two after the session.
Chairperson, in as far as the disaster concern and the allegations, together with the bureaus that the committees have seen in the slide, I think this point is important to indicate that the issue of the disaster and the disaster-stricken areas, the assessment is done by the National Disaster Management Center, and whereby, and thereafter, together with MECs, or rather the mayor or the MMPs of the metro, declare or put a declaration and proclamation on those areas as disaster-stricken. But what happens thereafter is that just after that process has been undertaken, the National Trailer, together with the center, which is the Disaster Management Center, they decide on the allocation based on the assessments that have been undertaken at the center and put an allocation that will focus on the area as disaster stricken, and that money gets actually embedded into a human settlement development grant. Now, as far as the bureau is concerned, in the previous financial year, we had allocations based on the assessment of the previous financial year. So in this financial year, the allocation for Eastern Cape, Gauteng, Limpopo, as well as Mpumalanga, those are the assessments that were undertaken in the previous financial year for them to get an allocation for this year. And the zero, whereby we do not have, the money was allocated in the previous. What happens is that money, too, together with the department, provides a report to National Treasury and the Disaster Management Center in general. So we do not decide on the allocation, but the center, together with the MEC and the MMC of the metro, decides on the allocation.
but it gets embedded together with National Treasure on our semester's development fund.
Chair, the question on whether we meet the targets or not is we feel, and we've done our homework, that those targets, the 177,000 housing opportunities for the current financial year, that target is achievable. If we don't meet the target, it won't be because of the bank cuts, it will be because maybe of poor contractor performance or provincial performance or municipal performance. But the targets are realistic and they are achievable, and they're not affected by the budget cut. So they are doable. I think we'll be able to meet those targets if provinces and municipalities to perform. The second question on the contractor, the panel of contractors, we started this exercise with the Chief Procurement Officer last year in June. We met with the Chief Procurement Officer. We had a CFO's forum last year to look at a respective way of procuring for human settlements in the sector. We're managing a budget of 80 billion rand, and we feel that this budget can perform if we don't break it into small portions. So we looked at that. I think the challenge that we're faced with now, we've gone out on tender already to get some aspects to assist us in packaging this. We will be able to have a report on how to manage this particular process in 3 months' time. I must say that some provinces already are using a panel of contractors. We're not starting from ground zero. There are provinces that are using a panel of contractors. I'm aware the Eastern Cape has a panel of contractors that they use, because you can't go out on tender every year as if you didn't know what you applied for. Western Cape is using a panel of contractors as well. Gauteng, they have a panel of contractors. What we wanted to do is to standardize the procurement process for all the provinces so that we are able to get zero for money. Because in some instances, just Northern Cape last month, they went out on tender and all the bids, they came back at 206,000 units. But the quantum is fixed at 160,000. So the question is, if the price for the house is fixed, what's the purpose of going out on tender? As you don't know how much that price, how much the unit cost is. So we wanted to standardize the procurement process for all the provinces so that we can generate value for money. Those are the two questions there that I wanted to respond to. Thank you very much.
One issue with regards to your IT systems and the database information. If you could perhaps assure this committee, just about this one issue which I think has been making all of us, your register or your record of home owners, particularly RTP home. If your IT systems, your setup that IT system centrally linked to the province and probably to the municipality, so that you address this question of me owning an RTP here where I'm seated and then move on to that store and build myself a shack and then claim another RTP house, get it and then move over to old assembly, create another shack and claim in that house, etc. and so on and so on. Because nobody can track me. Your system can't say, but we gave you an RTP house 2 years ago in M46. You can't go to old assembly and claim a second RTP house. Yet if you look at if you consider the social grant beneficiaries, you almost 100% know who is receiving a social grant of what nature. If that person moves to another area, he can still receive the social grant in the area, in a new area, but can't go back the following day and receive the same grant somewhere else. So please assure us that you have the system, because otherwise, you will always be spending money on one and the same person two times, three times, and five times. And in the meantime, there are people who really are in need of come and be with us. Can you comment on that?
So we have a scheme. We presented it this morning. The Select Committee on Social Services, they wanted to look at how it's managed, how it's run. We demonstrated it this morning. We have a system in place. You cannot get an RTP house twice. What happens if you have noted, if you had an RTP house and your ID number is linked to that RTP house and your beneficiaries as well, your dependents are linked to that RTP house, it simply means even if you were to go to Devon or you go to Eastern Cape, you will not get an RTP house again, because we have a central system. It's called the ASS system, the Housing Subsidy System. The integrity of that system, Chair, we have defended it, we've checked it. In fact, the biggest challenge that we are faced with is informal settlements, most informal settlements, is because you have a significant number of non-qualifiers, people who don't qualify for RTP houses because they have received an RTP house elsewhere. So if you go into an informal settlement and with the hope that you're going to get an RTP house again, chances are you will not get that RTP house. But the problem, to give you an example now about Langa, the M2 gateway, the reason why that project has been moving very slow is because some of the people who are in low informal settlements are people who have received houses before. And the system kicks it up immediately that you have a house, there is a title deed registered against you, so you can't get a house again. You can't get an RTP house twice. That system, Chair, is working, and we are more than willing to come back to this committee and present it to you and demonstrate how it works. We've got all the controls in place to make sure that no one individual is going to get an RTP house in one town or in another town. The system is in place and we monitor it on a daily basis.
Thank you. Members, any follow-ups? No. Honourable Shoveston.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want through you, Chairperson, that the committee allows them to come in and what they say they have presented in the other committee, so that in the future we've got the same understanding of issues.
Yes, indeed, we will get in touch with yourselves so that we can tease the issues further where we think we need the further understanding of what this department is doing. Very important work that this department is doing for our people. And that's why members would like to go further and understand and be better some of the areas that remain but we would like to thank you for making yourselves available today. Thank you for your presentation. We wish you safe travel. Now, honourable members, thank you very much as well for your presence. Once more, let me remind you that the ETC is a continuum. So, from here, you go and slop it up there. Thank you to the support staff. Thank you very much for the meeting. Thank you.